Welcome to the CRE Shark Eye Show, where we discuss commercial real estate. This is your host, Ishai Breslauer. Here we meet every Monday to talk commercial real estate and prop tech. We will dive deep into the different asset classes, discuss the market, talk about the new and exciting technologies, meet key people in the industry, and get some inspiration. Let's begin. Hey guys, before we start, I just want to point out the 6 best secrets for commercial real estate. It's a free download. Go to the text side and you will find it. It has absolutely great information, completely free, how to become a landlord, how to determine the value of a property, or creative financing for commercial real estate. All of it is completely free. Go download it. Also, I want to point out my CRE crash course. It's a 2-week must-have program with a must-have skills for commercial real estate, like investment strategies, the must-have financial terms, how a deal is done. Go take a look at it, go to the text side and click on the link. And now let's continue with our program. Hey guys, how are you? This is Ishai Breslauer, your host of the CRE Shark Eye Show. Hope you guys are doing fantastic today. We have with us Barry Schmidt. Barry Schmidt, I just actually met him in Manhattan several months ago, and it was a great experience talking to him. And his business is quite exceptional. He's a construction consultant. And Barry, I want to thank you for joining us. Really, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me on your show. I really appreciate it. It's great.
My pleasure. My pleasure. And you know what? Before we even get into the conversation, we start digging in. If you could give us like a 2-minute elevator pitch of what your business is about, it would be great.
Okay. The business is called Schmidt Construction Consulting. I've been doing it for about 22 years. I'm advising developers, owners, investors, and any other type of entity that's undertaking a construction project. It could be, you know, a tenant or an institution, government office. And we guide them and help them through the actual process, the bricks and mortar process. So it's from the service spans the conception to completion. It can start during site selection and, of course, the hiring of the designers, architects, engineers, construction company, the bidding, which is very important. And then when the construction is actually happening, there are plenty of problems to be solved and getting it all the way to TCO, which is occupancy. And way too many projects finish the bricks and mortar, but they don't get approved by the city and then they sit. So that's a major, major focus of what I do. Try to get all the way, get it occupied to get the whole thing functioning right.
So we have a lot to talk about, and it's great because it's a great topic. And you know what? Before we dig into the ins and outs of this business and the, you know, what you do, how did you get into this?
Well, I graduated a long, long time ago from engineering school on Long Island. And the first job I got was as an engineer for a manufacturer on Long Island, but that didn't seem to have a future. And I had a friend who was working in construction. So I thought, why don't I just look there? And I found a job in Manhattan, and it was a high-rise steel building on Fifth Avenue. So, you know, it was irresistible. And that was, you know, a couple of years after college. And that's how I got into that. And I did it for others. I got to do the math about 14 years. And I also got my graduate degree during that time, my business degree. So, you know, I wanted to be in my own business. I knew there was like a feeling for me working for other companies. You know, I worked for construction companies and I worked for owners, but there was a ceiling. I didn't want it to be in my own business. So, you know, I figured, let me just help other owners with their projects and be a construction consultant. And that's what I did. That was in the year 2000. And here we are.
Quite a long time of an experience.
Yeah. And, too long. And
sounds very, very exciting. You know what? Tell me something. If I want to emphasize, if I want to understand the construction consultant role and to differentiate it from construction management or the CM, as you know, if you please, if you could tell us a little bit about the differences, because obviously you're not a GC, we understand that. But the consultant versus the construction manager, who is coming as a supervisor, meaning on behalf of the developer or the owner, to come and oversee the GC, etc. I'm not talking about an open book, which we're going to talk about, but talking about a person. What's the difference between that type of persona, that type of a guy or a girl, and you?
Okay, well, that's a great question, actually. And a lot of people get those terms mixed up, construction manager. So a construction manager, I think it's a legal term. It's really a general contractor and is working for a fee instead of providing a lump sum guarantee price for what's on the plan. So, but it's the same company. It's the same animal. It's a, you know, it's a general contractor working for a fee. So it's simply put. I'm a consultant to the owner. So I'm not in an adversarial relationship with the owner. I want to be next to the owner on his side of the table so I can help him because, you know, the contractor, they're in for a profit and sometimes stuff happens and, you know, they can get very expensive and unexpected expenses. Everyone knows that. So the owner needs some help. Sometimes they're very experienced, the owner, and they may not need, or they may be just very busy or doing something else and they need somebody there. Or it may be it could be a company that's never done it before, or there are a lot of new developers in New York, market so hot, they make money in other businesses and they want to, you know, build a multifamily, what have you, or they've done it once and they got burnt. So they need someone to help them. And it's not just with the contractor. It's also, I mean, I take a holistic approach, as I said. So the designers, you know, people complain about delayed construction, you know, and sometimes if it's delayed a week, people can get very upset. But during the design process, you can lose 2 months and people, it doesn't register on people. So there's a whole process, you know, from A to Z that should flow in a, you know, a reasonably, not to rush, but a deliberate manner. So we're not losing time and money. So it's all that. Sometimes it's just advisory, or it could be soup to nuts, oversight, or anywhere in between.
Tell me something. When your clients are typically coming to hire you, what, in terms of the phase of the project, and obviously I could see the advantage of taking you from the very beginning, but typically, meaning it's a huge advantage, obviously, meaning because so many things are happening to a project in the life of a project, and it's all, and you know better than anyone, it's all in the planning, you know, meaning coming from a developer point of view, the developer really is, I wouldn't call it done, but it's pretty much done with his work once construction starts. Everything is pre. Then construction starts, it's the overseeing, and things are happening right, you know, on the go. But the development phase is very important. So this is the question, basically. When are you typically being hired, and why is it so important to go from the beginning? If you could explain to us, you know, the ins and outs of that role and the importance of it.
Sure. And I'm not going to agree with you that developers are dumb, because they're all going to watch this and I'll be, you know, I'll be very embarrassed, but I know you've worked and done the work. But yeah, I mean, a lot of them, as you say, focus on the financial side, the acquisition and raising money. And they, you know, they hired the architect, they hired the engineer, they hired the construction company, and some of them. And they're like, okay, you know, come back in 12 months. I'm going to watch the building go up and pay you, and then it'll be done, and everything will be good. But there's some, it's such a can of worms underneath, as you know. Like, you turn over the rock, and there's a lot of insects under there, and each one of them can sting you. So, as I say, some are very experienced. They have very experienced staff, and some don't. So in terms of what I do, yeah, I prefer to come in at the beginning. And like you said, the planning is key. The planning is very important. But if you're not familiar with the middle, all those bugs under all those rocks, you may not be planning. The planning may not be optimal for your actual needs, which is time and money. You may be overlooking things. And it's one example. I mean, I've noticed in the industry for 30 years, a lot of owners, they want to break ground, which is great. And then we build a structure, top it off, you know, in 4 months, because the concrete goes so fast, that's great. And then you have 30 trains inside who can't, you know, step all over each other and can't finish the building, although he's paid by that point for a third of the value. So I'm looking at the whole thing to get the whole thing planned and lined up, good contracts with the subs or the GC, or like you said, open book, it's a CM and it's a collaboration, and try to really, you know, make the best setup to get the job done. And with the least amount of problems, delays, mistakes, cost overrun. And part of that is making sure the drawings are suitable for the contractor. And one of my big philosophies, I think it's absolutely true, but the contractors work fastest when you give them exactly what they need in terms of information and then get out of their way. Because if you give them half a pie, they can't go too fast or too far. And then they're going to stop and they're going to be meetings and arguments, et cetera. So I really focus on that. Let's get the drawings complete. Let's look it over. Let's get all the questions on the table. And then we'll all start together and work together. And of course, it's not perfect either, but it's better than if you don't do that at all. And the outcome is certainly better.
Tell me something. Could you give us, in order to make it vivid, so we can actually, we hear the story, but to actually like sort of see it through the story, to give us an example of it, like two cases where you came in and you had to solve a problem that was pretty much, you had to like save the day and what you did with it. That would be great to hear.
Well, the first one I'm going to think about that comes to mind, it's not the biggest, most glamorous, but it was a walk up in Harlem on 151st Street. And it was an owner who had no experience. He bought the 5-story walk up and he was all gung ho and had the architect, had the construction company. He hired literally a guy working out of a pickup truck in the neighborhood.
And it was a rehab.
It was a rehab of a walk up, right? You know, like not a brownstone, it was bigger than a brownstone, but kind of like a brownstone corner site. So at some point he realized, you know, things weren't going right. And there were structural changes in the rehab too, with the masonry. And I got called in, someone he knew of me. And I got there, you know, and the thing was, we were going to try to all work together as a team because it was understood that contractor wasn't very sophisticated, but we're already committed. We've already spent money. Let's just work together hand in hand and get it done. But then as it went on, the contractor kept making mistakes, and the mistakes he made, like vivid, you have existing joists in a building and they need to be replaced on a bearing wall, masonry bearing. This is an old building. So when he cut them off and put the new joists on, they weren't properly connected anymore into the masonry. So they were useless. And he already charged so much money for it. It has to be done again. And then the more we looked, the more mistakes. So at some point, that was before 2008. And I had to advise my client that we need to stop and he should sell it. That was one of the considerations he had, but he really didn't want it. And save the day. I saved his day. I don't think I saved my day because it cut the project short, but I have to do what's right, of course. And he would have been in big, big trouble. He would have spent way more than the value of the building. And they knew it. And I love to remember that because it was a little, I'd love the projects to go on as long as possible. But if the client thinks I'm doing that, I work at will. So I'm not going to be around very long. So I always do what's best in the best interest of the customer. In that case, we had to stop. And we did.
That's an amazing story. it sounds like, you know what? Let me ask you this. What is typically the size of a deal where you're being called on? Because I'm assuming there's a certain size that, you know, nobody would think I need a construction consultant, but there's a certain size where more problems can occur. It's more complex. And there you probably come in. Could you tell us?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, that's true. The consideration that if it gets too small relative to the fee, it might become less tenable. I try not to box myself in high or low. But there's sometimes a really small project doesn't need a project manager. I'm looking at a brownstone right now. It's a brownstone condo that had a additional floor added in Brooklyn a couple of years ago, and now it's leaking. And as you know, there were reports it's leaking all over the place. And that could be a $10,000 problem or it could be a $500,000 problem if it's not handled right. So they do need somebody to come in and help guide that, because it could be, you know, if you just get a contractor in, he could be there for years digging each hole in each location. I fixed this, but now that's not wrong. I fixed that, but now this isn't wrong, isn't right. This is wrong. And it's a spiral out of control forever. They might not spend $10,000 or $50,000 in construction, or they might wind up spending more. So they need someone like me to help, you know, set it up and do the proper, make sure the investigation is done properly with the right people, and then do the contracting. I mean, otherwise you give the guy a contract, he does a piece of work, then everything else is a change order for the rest of the job. And that's very expensive. So there are ways, other ways to do it, if you're careful and smart, to break it up into separate pieces. And you don't necessarily want to bid each piece out to somebody else, but you have the option to do that to keep the cost down.
And tell me, what's the size of that project?
Well, a very small, like a row house, brownstone. Maybe it's 4,000 square feet.
Oh, wow. That's literally
so small. That's on the low end. It's right. In terms of a construction value. And also, I looked at a condo, a new condo that needed to be fitted out for some buyers. And, the construction there may not be more than $500,000. So it's on my low end because of the fiesta. But, you know, if they're not around or if there's special things in there, let's say they work, maybe they're in Europe or maybe they're half the time on the West Coast. They need somebody. Or they're going to get, maybe taken advantage of, or they just might not get what they want. So there are cases where the construction value is low, or it does, pay for them to invest in a fee to have a manager there.
Tell me something. What would be the largest project you got involved with in the past, which was exciting to you and you remember it like as a great, great experience?
That's like separate questions because they're not all the largest ones aren't always the greatest experiences, but it is a lot of fun, you know? So I think the biggest, I worked on two very large dollar value projects, but one was more upfront. So I'll just mention it was in the B. Altman building. It was the City University of New York Graduate School, which is still there. And we had just finished, right? This is when I was an employee. There was a library on the other side that we built, which was $40 million budget. So that was large. Then when I started consulting, I took an outsourced like project team supplementary role for Millennium Partners. And they were building up a bunch of very large Ritz-Carltons here and across the country. And I think one of them is still in the news in San Francisco because it leans a little. But I got on the St. Moritz building as that became the Ritz-Carlton Central Park South. So that was historic. It was a great experience. It was a very large budget. I mean, that was way over $100-something million. And it was 20 years ago. So the value now is probably, because construction prices go up faster than inflation, it's probably $200 million today, or who knows. And there are a lot of problems in that existing building again. You know what? It turned out, and these are some great lessons learned, that it's hard to remember exactly all the numbers, but it was around a 40-something story building. And then halfway through, they realized the steel was rotting on the upper 20 or upper 10 floors, and they had to be completely demolished and rebuilt from scratch. And it was a landmark historic building, and the facade and the steel. So, and that's part of what drove the cost up. So that was extremely intense and complex and expensive. And it was a great team. I was happy to be part of it. And it was a great experience for me.
Sounds exciting. And it sounds also unique because you come, you probably get involved with things that are a bit more complex than usual, or they don't have to be most complex, but in terms of the owner, for them, there's a complexity that they need to get through and they need someone to, so you know what, I'm sure it's more enjoyable sometimes, you know, to be the savior, you know, as opposed to be a service provider. You come and you help them to solve a certain problem.
Right.
Tell me something. I want to shift gears a little bit and talk about the relationship that a consultant has with the team. I mean, the whole construction team is huge, and it starts from the development phase, you know, with whether it's the financial part, you know, with whoever and whatever. And then it goes to the architectural, to the construction, structural, engineering, and MEPs. And you have all these people around, you know,
absolutely,
from HVAC and this and that. And everybody's coming and going. And and everybody has an interest. And I've sat on the table where people had, disputes. They want to do this, and this consultant says that. Can you tell us a little bit about your take or your input when it comes to those scenarios? What would you do, what you did, and usually how you act?
Thank you. That happens a lot. I mean, that's where we're talking about the whole process during the design, but also, of course, during the construction. And there's so many there. How many stops are on a job? 30? The general contractor, sometimes in general contractor, architect, engineers, as you said, owners. And there's always unknowns. So there's always decisions to be made, and there's always money and time at stake. So you characterize it very, very well. It's definitely a big part of the value I offer to the client because, we said at the beginning, sometimes they don't know what's happening in the middle, that black box of construction. So yeah, I'm there. There's a team there. And I become kind of an authority figure in a way. I mean, I have to be, but I'm not the owner either. So I can't be a dictator or a jerk. I can't because, literally I could get myself fired. If it goes to my head or, but if I'm too nice with the guy, then I'm not doing my job and I'm a pushover and that's out of control too. So there's a happy balance, as you allude to, a happy medium. But people have to know that they're going to be held accountable and they're expected to cooperate and do their jobs right. And usually when they know that, even if it's not said, just by the way we all conduct ourselves, they get the message. And that's enough. That little piece of, little tension that we're not total pals. And, if you screw up royally, not to say we go and hammer people if they make mistakes, but if you're going to come and take advantage of us, that's not going to be acceptable. But not to be such a jerk where every little thing, why didn't this happen today? Why didn't this happen yesterday? There are people like that in the business, and they pound on people, so-called below the. And you can't do that either. I don't do that. They just have to know. If we're all acting in good faith, and we know the owner wants us to finish on time, keep the cost at a minimum, although sometimes we know their problems. Sometimes the owner has to make a decision. We're all waiting on the owner. And I can't walk into his office and berate him. I won't be around very long, will I? So it's a balancing act, but yeah. And then the owner does appreciate it when he sees that, because he or she, because then they don't have to do that themselves because it's stressful. And if they've never done it before, it's like, you don't know what you don't know. And so they get clobbered with all these problems. And some of them learn, and some of them really don't quite get it. And, they don't have the best outcome for them. And I've met a few lately, actually. Some not so great outcomes for some people. They didn't finish financially the way they need to do. So there's a value out there. And again, the experienced ones also, they can't sit every day. And not that I'm there every day, but be intimately involved every day and come when necessary to solve all these problems and all these personalities. So even if they're like so qualified in that area, they have a higher and better use for their time. And then in addition to that, there's technical problems sometimes on the site. And I'm not afraid also to get my hands and shoes dirty and go there. And, I have an engineering degree. I've been doing this for a while. So, and sometimes, people don't talk to each other on projects. You get everyone there and they start screaming, but did you look at this? Did you look at that architect? Did you see this? No, nobody told me. But just to get everyone there and solve the problem literally when it happens or as soon as it happens. It's all part of it, not just at a conference table.
I think that a role like yours requires a lot of field work, meaning you have to be there. You have to see how it goes and how things are going. Can you talk a little bit about that experience of being outdoor? I'll share with you, I have a friend who's a construction management. He's a project manager, construction manager, that level. And usually he works at a fee. He consults. He also is somewhat of an owner's rep. So it's
right, that's
fairly similar. It's like borderline. Sometimes he's more on the side of the GC. Sometimes he's playing more the role of the owner. Sometimes he's hearing that. And he said something very unique. And tell me if you could identify with that. He said once he had a hip problem unrelated to his work. He had a hip problem. And he had to be He said that he always admired doctors. He said, always admire doctors and their jobs and how lucky they are and blah, blah, blah. And he did mostly small projects. That's what he did, mostly small things. And he said, I want to grow. I want to do big projects, etc. And he had that surgery. And he sits there and he said, my surgery was in geriatric. All the old people. And the smell of urine was all over. And he said, and then the doctors come in, and then I said to myself, I'm the luckiest man alive.
I'm in the fresh air. Construction.
Yeah, I'm outside. I'm like breathing, I'm all that stuff. Could you relate to that? Is that true also in your case? That you are a lot of outdoor experience?
Construction work is outdoors. It's always fun to go on a site because you're really there and they're real people and you know, the workers and hopefully there's a camaraderie. And I love doing that. And, you know, earlier in my career when I was a project manager and, you know, was coming up and spent time as an assistant super, I was there 5 days a week, right? So I can relate to that. But now in my role now, my template, unless it's such a project like the one I mentioned, St. Moritz, you know, Ritz-Carlton, that was so huge that I had to be there 24/7. It wasn't just me. There were other project managers because it was enormous. 5-star hotel with 5-star gym clubs and business clubs and restaurants, everything in
there. Everything.
So that was a huge complexity. So I was there. But normally, you know, when I'm working for clients these days, I don't need to be there. It's going to be too expensive and prohibitive for me to be there every day. And first of all, honestly, the general contractor is responsible for being there every day. And they have to have a super there every day. And of course, I'm in touch with them every day. And especially now with Zoom, I'm looking forward to using that more in the future. So I need to know that they're doing their job. If they're not doing their job and I need to be there every day, there's a problem. And that happens sometimes. And if I have to go, I have to go. But hopefully it's running perfectly. And I'm talking, communicating with the team all week by, you know, email and phone. And we come out once a week, typically, and we sit down. And as I say, we go through A to Z, all the issues on the project, the purchasing, you know, not just the progress, the purchasing, the payments, questions, RFIs. Do we know what's going on with this conflict in the drawings? Did the architect tell us? Have we submitted all the shop drawings? Are they approved? We do that every week. And we walk the whole job every week. So after that one day, you know, they need 4 days of rest. We all do. But that's typically how I do it, how I approach it, unless it's so incredibly complicated or there's a huge problem. And that's not what the client wants. So I don't want that either. But sometimes you have a crisis or you're called in the middle or late and you got to go. Or, you know, the thing has to finish. You know, we're opening the school in 4 weeks. It's, you know, after Labor Day, you know, it's got to get done. Got to be there. So, you know, I'll do what needs to be done. But that's not the, hopefully not the template for a reasonable project to run in terms of my services.
Anyway. Tell me something. I want to shift gears a little bit. Talking market-wise, and you're mostly in Manhattan, if I understand correctly, for the most part.
Manhattan-centric. So, of course, I do my marketing and networking there. I think you and I met at a networking event in Manhattan. And then, you know, I meet people and get referrals, and they're usually in a circle somewhere around Manhattan, you know, in Manhattan, tri-state area, 5 boroughs. So that's basically my, you know, territory.
How would you call today's market in terms of development, construction? It's a very unique situation today with caps are so low and people are getting into them. What type of projects you meet nowadays? What type of owners will approach you for consultancy today versus, I wouldn't say COVID, but let's say pre-COVID, meaning today versus pre-COVID, where are we in terms of construction and in terms of the development phases and the types of projects around New York?
Well, when I look back at the past 12 months, which is basically the end of COVID till now, I thought and still believe it came back really strong. It was kind of similar. We were coming back, not the very beginning. And then, of course, there's a problem with commercial space, and hybrid workers and Zoom workers. So there may be low demand and low construction there, but there's also demand for renovation and repurposing those spaces. So it looked really good, frankly, a good economy then and now. Now, looking forward, the next 12 months may be a different story because there's a lot going on in the world. That wasn't going on a few months ago, like inflation and a war and, you know, some other things. So this all could change. But up till now and pre-COVID, first of all, New York has a structural housing shortage. It's been there since for my entire career. To me, it only looks like it's going to get worse. So that means there's always a demand for housing and there's always a demand for housing development. So from my perspective, as long as I'm in the industry, there's work for me and I'm happy. Although I don't just work on residential multifamily, but that's a driver, I think, or at least for private sector, not public construction in New York.
Right.
That could start to change because a lot of the regulations and laws, I don't think people realize what's coming up, but that could change too. And the other piece of the uncertainty in the future, there's, I don't know if you heard of Local Law 97, which is relates to, frankly, the Green New Deal. Every owner is going to have to retrofit their building of a certain size. And there are other regulations coming on in terms of prevailing wages for certain projects. And that law is brand new and it hasn't been vetted out through the bureaucracy and there's uncertainty. How many projects it's going to apply to, but that could hugely raise the cost of construction in New York State. And then there's the 421A, which I think everyone watching knows is going to expire soon. I don't think there's anything there. So the future is actually very different than the last 12 months in the past. So I always found multifamily as a prime source. I think it will be, but I think unfortunately costs are going to go up. And there'll be less people doing it and a higher barrier entry to become a developer, construction manager. But there'll always be a demand because it's so difficult now. There's going to be a need. People need housing in New York.
There's shortage. We know that.
It's going to get worse, in my opinion, which is unfortunate. I wish we could just build whatever's needed and satisfy. And that would be enough. The city would grow. But that's not the case. And we may be at a turning point, as I said.
A very interesting market, and very interesting activity. Would you say that you're mostly in the residential aspect, multifamily, condo development, that kind of stuff? Or are you also going to office, retail, industrial every once in a while, or no?
No, yes, the second part. Definitely multifamily is where the strong, you know, core of the business and in New York City. But I work in all types of projects, so new, out of the ground. Renovation, multifamily, commercial fit out, retail fit out, light industrial. So any type of construction, as I say, that relates to a building. So someone says, look, I'm rebuilding my nuclear power plant in New Jersey. Can you help me? He's like, no, sorry. But anything, you know, just a regular, you know, bread and butter building in the real estate arena here in, you know, the tri-state area, that's the type of thing I've been doing and keep on doing. I mentioned hospitality too. I don't want to forget.
And right, schools. Hospitality, right. It's Carlton, you said.
All those types. Yeah.
Tell me something, when it comes to all those asset classes and the type of construction that you'll be involved in, which one is most challenging from the construction point of view and your involvement?
Yeah. You know, I have to go back to that Ritz-Carlton project because it was a renovation and in a five-star, and it's beyond five-star. I used to work for a developer who was developing hotels. This was before that. And he was developing some multifamily. And it was like, beyond, you can't describe how many stars are in some of these hotels in New York, especially in that area, 59th Street, 57th Street. So it's beyond. But it's a historic building. So the details and the intricacy plus the existing condition. So that really is complex. But then, you know, mentioning a school, I recently finished up a school, a small school, 15,000 square feet, but it was in a landmark building in Cobble Hill that used to be a movie theater and was renovated 10 times and had like 10 different structural systems in it. So again, it's not the Ritz-Carlton, but that's challenging because really nobody knows what's in there. And there was due diligence done before I got there and it wasn't done so great. And so that was very challenging too. But the happy part of it is we got through it. And, you know, the school now is doing very well and we got inside. But that was challenging. The renovations are very challenging, to say the least.
Tell me something. Was there a project where you stayed all the way to the end, occupancy, the whole thing? Or it's most times when the problem is, quote unquote, solved, you are pretty much, you're moving to the next thing. How does it work?
Well, ideally, and most of the time, it is through occupancy, because that frequently is the hardest part of the project, even after all the design and construction work's done. You know, it's dealing with the bureaucracy, and it's you can't even blame the bureaucracy per se, because they have their rules. And what I found is nobody is focused on that TCO until a week before it's needed. You know, that might be exaggerating, and it's a blanket statement, but typically, the contractor's worrying about finishing the construction. And I said, the owner even, getting the ground, I'm topping off in 4 months. But I know, and you know, and a lot of other people know, that there's all sorts of stuff that has to happen, not just bureaucratically, but in the design and inspections and sign-offs, and that's a lot of work. So I'm ready to sign off the building, but I didn't apply to the fire department, so now there's a six-week backlog, and we have to sit waiting 6 weeks and hope we get an inspection, right? You know exactly what I'm talking about. And then we fail. And so now it's a 12-week delay, but everything's done. So that is something, I focus on in the beginning. We don't want that to happen. Now, not everything goes perfectly, but there has to be a great effort and thought into it and an implementation. And sometimes it's fighting an uphill battle with the subs. They're like, why are you worried about this? Why are you worried about that? We got to get it done. Hey, guess what? If it's done and no one can move in, what good is it? So, yeah, that's I should be there to the end. Usually I am. Sometimes I'm asked to solve problems, but it should be to the end.
Barry, how many owners that you represent that they're not in New York? They are in different countries, different cities, almost not present or not present at all. And you are there as their owner's rep, meaning percentage-wise out of all the projects that you basically deal with throughout the years.
Maybe 20 or 30%. The school I mentioned was run by an investment group in California. So they didn't have anyone local. And I worked on a kind of high-end food instantaneous delivery cafe. I don't know if there's really a good word for it. High-end in Soho. And that was supposed to be a chain, and it was financed by an investment group in Boston. They didn't have anyone here. And then sometimes I've worked for a Chinese developer who is based in the U.S., but he spent half his time in China. And there are others, who live there. Israeli, there's a lot of Israeli development. But the vast majority are local, I'd have to say, but a good 20 or 30%. Maybe out of town or overseas.
What would be the most challenging aspect of a construction, of a development plus construction, I would say, from your experience? Which point is the pitfall for most people are saying, that is my problem, and you have to come in for the most part for that?
Time and money, of course. I can't get these projects built fast enough, or the costs are coming in too high, especially when you talk about a developer. That's the biggest problem.
What would be the cost issue, usually? Meaning, obviously, it could be 5 million things, but I'm saying from your experience.
Well, if the project isn't designed or purchased properly, or if there's a lot of, if it's a renovation, and even if there isn't, there's a high probability of change orders. And sometimes they could spiral out of control. And someone inexperienced doesn't know how to deal with it. They weren't expecting it. Or, like I say, they are experienced with it, but it takes so much time to deal with it. It's like they get flooded with paperwork. So that's a problem. And as I described at the beginning, if you're starting off thinking about that and working with the design team and in the bidding, and then is it a general contract where it's lump sum? If you rush into that early, some clients, they have a roll of drawings. It doesn't even say, it says for bidding only. And then they buy a general contract off of it. And guess what? It doesn't say for construction. So they have to be changed again. Now, all of a sudden they have change orders and nothing should have changed. So they didn't know what they didn't know. And that creates delays, and time is money. Or if people take, for example, the low bidder, and they're not capable of completing, or they overpay because they didn't realize the value of the work, and now there's not enough money to finish. Things like that to create real big problems. But yeah, you want the whole thing to flow. And then there has to be the planning up front. And then, you know, keeping an eye on it the whole entire way. As I said, go through A to Z next week, every week. And if you don't go to A to Z every week, you're still not going to catch 100% of the problems doing that. But you'll catch a lot of them. So it'll be less expensive and way less delayed if you're diligent. And hopefully get that TCO pretty soon rather than very much later. So it's kind of all of that.
This is so unique, meaning this role is such a unique role that you have. And obviously so very needed by so many, because when it comes to problems, you need someone to help solve. And especially an owner, a developer, many times when it comes to talking to professionals, you rely on those professionals because you don't know the details. You don't understand when they tell you that there's a problem with certain beam that needs to be here or there, or a certain type of plumbing that needs to go through that, and that common introduction contradicts you. Meaning a developer just understands for the most part, understand the aspect of here's a property, here's a deal, here's the money I need to make, here's the timeline, here's the amenities, here's what I want to see, here's what I want it to be. And that's why I want to serve my clients. But they don't necessarily know those details, and that's how important you are.
Right. I mean, a developer of any kind of project needs a project manager on his side. So if he can't do it, he or she, or doesn't hire someone, an owner's rep, consultant, they could be in for a lot of trouble. Like I say, they could do it themselves. Some do. Some are very successful doing it themselves. And some aren't as successful doing it themselves. And sometimes, look, I'll tell you, the developers, larger developers, they have huge staffs of project managers. And not necessarily getting the best type of project management coming out of there either, unfortunately. I'm not trying to paint the broad brush, but it does happen. So there's a lot of risk. There's a lot of risk, just in the, like you say, the nuts and bolts. And someone really, the owner needs someone to watch who knows what they're doing and can shepherd it through.
Tell me something before we say our goodbyes. I'm very curious about the marketing aspect of your business, because a lot of people say, okay, I know I need a GC or a CM. I know I need an architect. I know, but a guy like yourself, a person needs to understand and being educated enough to understand that they need it. And sometimes they may think they don't. So the marketing aspect, how does it work when you want to talk to a developer and say, hey, you need me? How does that work?
You know, you make a very good point. And it is, that's probably in terms of my business model and how I run things, that maybe that's my biggest challenge. Because it's exactly what you say. I say it all the time. I know I need an architect. I know I need an engineer. I know I need a GC. Why do I need you? You know, you're an expense. But you do for all the reasons we already said. But it is a very high bar to convince a client, especially when they're not initiated. Very high bar for me when I'm marketing and selling. So I do rely on word of mouth and networking and social media, which maybe this talk will become part of. And, you know, it's 90%, 99% may not want someone like me. And it's a challenge. I wish we could get the word out more and we'd all be better off. But it is a challenge. I know it's a challenge when I go in. And like I say, some of them are very experienced. You can't say, I know better than you. Maybe I don't. If they've never done it before, they don't know what they don't know. So really the prime candidate is kind of, you know, someone's done it once or twice and they've been hurt, so they know they need somebody to help them. Or really these institutional types, they're not developers. It's a big corporation or a hotel. They know they're not in construction, so they know they have to hire somebody. So that's also a better way, you know, a better avenue. But it is a very high hurdle. You nailed it, Yishai, on the when you laid out the question. They don't know why. It's very hard to convince someone until they lived it. Why they
obviously know. Someone who's going through a hardship or a turbulence in their life, no matter in which aspect, no matter in what type of a thing, They always, you know, it's the best school, and they understand that they need the help when they come through it again, or they need the education. So in your role, obviously developers would say, hey, hey, I don't want it to happen again. I'm calling Barry. I'm calling Barry to help me out. I don't want this thing to happen again. So I understand. And the aspect, obviously, of education here is key to make people understand. You don't want to be that person who went through that in order to get Barry after I went through it. I want to take Barry from day one because I don't want to go through it. Because I don't want to.
Absolutely.
I don't want to get too costly. And I prefer paying a certain fee to one person versus, you know, this mega, you know, unforeseen, meaning, you know, contingency that you know, I didn't see.
Absolutely. And, you know, the proposition is we earn a return on the fee through less cost, less time. And if we're not doing that, that's most of the time. Sometimes, like I said, it's small, and there needs to be a risk mitigation element also, that it doesn't spiral out of control because it's so complicated. So that's an element too. But generically, the clients could earn a return multiple times on the fee they lay out. And the bigger the project, the higher the return because the construction value is so huge, you know, $10 million, $100 million. You know, it's, you know, I'm not going to say, you know, you pay X, you know, you lose 2 days. Look at your time value of money. A lot of the less sophisticated developers, they don't understand, you know, basic time value of money. But if they lose a week of income or, you know, when it's the present value of that lost day on some projects or a lost week could be more than my fee three or four times. So there is definitely a rationale there, but not everyone understands it.
Right, 100%. You guys, I hope you guys are enjoying this conversation because it's so educational. It's amazing. And you know what? You guys can see the links above, below. Barry, tell everybody, please, before we start our goodbyes, how can they find you?
Okay, thanks. Well, the name of the company is Schmidt Construction Consulting. So my website is schmidtconcon.com, which takes a long time to explain.
Yeah, but they can see the links. You guys see the links. Go ahead.
You see the links. ConCon for Construction Consultant. I saw one of your recent guests said my email is so easy for people to understand. They'll never forget it a couple of weeks ago. And mine is so hard. But the point is, once they get it, they're not going to forget it. So it's SchmidtConCon.com, or they can call me or email me. Email me at BarrySchmidt@SchmidtConCon.com or text or give me a call at 212-495-9117.
Perfect. And if someone, for example, if they find you on LinkedIn.
Absolutely. LinkedIn a lot to you.
LinkedIn is great. And Barry, what can I tell you? We learned a lot today. Thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you so much for having me and allowing me your time. I appreciate it so much.
For sure. My pleasure. And you guys, I hope you enjoyed it. And I'm going to see you in the next show. Hey guys, thanks for joining me in this CRE Shark Eye Show. I hope you enjoyed it. And go subscribe, download, do whatever you guys need to do. And I'll see you in the next episode. Take care of yourselves.